I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. To mark the final day voters can register in Pennsylvania for the presidential election, Philadelphia's mayor joined a discussion about a little-known civil rights activist from the 19th century. Octavius Cato, a black teacher in Philadelphia, rallied African Americans to vote and was assassinated in 1871. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports.
95 years before the March on Selma, where African-American activists were attacked as they tried to mobilize voters in 1965, Octavius Cato was doing the same thing in Philadelphia. In the spring of 1870, 10,000 people gathered on Race Street to parade and listen to speakers, including Cato. The next year, on Election Day, he would be shot dead in the street. Speaking at Philadelphia Community College, Mayor Jim Kenney says he's waiting for the installation of the only public statue in Philadelphia of a black individual. Octavius Cato will take his place outside City Hall in 2017.
And the fact that it's on public space is significant because it's finally acknowledging what this man did and what other people did to make the city, country, state a great, the place, not great, it's not the greatest place, it's the thing it is today. We have a lot of problems, and I'll make a political statement. In the end, this country will be saved again by African Americans on November 8th.
Kenney is a Democrat, and here he's referring to the presumed defeat of Donald Trump if African Americans turn out to vote in November. Kenney may never have heard of Cato were it not for a recently published biography called Tasting Freedom by Philadelphia journalists Daniel Biddle and Murray Dubin. As part of their research, they found a descendant who told Biddle not to get too focused on Cato because there were 100 other people just like him.
The truth of those words grew and grew on Murray and me all through our research. We discovered all these lives of men and women in Cato's generation and in his father's generation who put their bodies on the line in battles for equal rights 80, 90, and 100 years before the modern civil rights movement.
Biddle said Cato stood out because he was the whole package, a radical but peaceful activist, a dedicated teacher, good-looking, charismatic, and a winning baseball player. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
When Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney says African Americans will save the country in the 2016 election, it would seem that Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton and her surrogates would agree. They're spending a lot of time trying to build support among young voters in Philadelphia, particularly African Americans. WHYY's J. Scott Smith reports on the many ways her campaign is working to ensure a strong turnout of young African Americans at the polls.
On a sunny fall afternoon at Temple University, about 40 college students gathered to listen to legendary Philadelphia hip-hop star Freeway talk not about his days touring with Jay-Z, but about why he supports Hillary Clinton.
Back then in 2012, I didn't have health care. So just for my medicines alone, I was spending $600-$700 a month.
In 2012, Freeway was diagnosed with end-stage renal failure. He cites Clinton's support of Obamacare, as well as his Muslim faith, as his main reasons for getting behind her.
This guy, Donald Trump, wants to ban Muslims from coming into our country. And we cannot have that. You know, Hillary Clinton knows that anybody that wants to ban Muslims from coming into the country must have lost their mind.
Clinton's campaign continues to amass a number of high-profile black celebrity supporters. Along with hip-hop artists Freeway, Pusha T, Chance the Rapper, and Snoop Dogg, Clinton recently was endorsed by NBA stars LeBron James and Steph Curry. Her campaign just released an ad featuring the cast of the popular Fox show Empire.
What will we tell the future generation?
Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, Freddie Gray, Philando Castile.
The ad features Taraji P. Henson, Gabourey Sidibe, Lee Daniels, and others imploring young African-American voters not to sit out Election Day.
I would like a president that will protect Obamacare.
Somebody who understands personally the plight of a woman.
I want a president who stands up against intolerance.
There's only one person in his race who said Black Lives Matter.
Now, while Clinton enjoys widespread support from African-Americans as a whole, she struggled to find her footing with black millennials. It was the youth vote that helped buoy Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012. In response, Clinton has also enlisted the help of President Obama, First Lady Michelle Obama, and her opponent in the Democratic primaries, Bernie Sanders. Her campaign fears that these young voters, many of whom supported Sanders, will either stay home or vote for a third-party candidate in protest, and that could sway the election toward Donald Trump.
I was Team Bernie. You know, I'm 18. I'm very idealistic.
Michaela Warwick is a freshman at the University of Pennsylvania and a native of Lynchburg, Virginia, who's voting in her first presidential election. She, like many of her friends, supported Sanders during the primary. Once he lost, however, she quickly switched her allegiance to Clinton. Her friends, on the other hand...
I say I have 5 really good friends, and 3 of them are currently on the track with me to vote for Hillary. And then there are 2 that we're still kind of working on, and we're like, come on, guys, you have to realize that this election is crucial.
Donald Trump has consistently polled in the low single digits, and in some cases at 0%, with African Americans. His attempts to interact with the black community in Detroit and Philadelphia were not well received. The only young black voices heard while he spoke at an invite-only function at a North Philadelphia church last month were the ones protesting in the streets. While Obama's historic run to the presidency energized African Americans to vote in record numbers, Clinton, who's seeking to become the first woman elected president, has struggled to stoke that same kind of fire.
Last election was kind of historic, the last 2.
That's 26-year-old Ray Lewis of Oak Lane in North Philly. He supported President Obama in 2008 and 2012 and will back Clinton this year. He feels the lukewarm response to Clinton could have as much to do with election fatigue as it does the candidate herself.
He was the first black president, so I feel like that really made people want to vote, especially black people. But now it's just like, you know, I'm doing okay. I make $60,000 a year, like my family's all right. Things are cool, but people just got to look at the bigger picture, you know what I'm saying?
Clinton's support of making student loans less burdensome, raising the minimum wage, and speaking out against police killings of black citizens has struck a chord with voters like Warwick and Lewis. But a perceived enthusiasm gap remains. Lewis thinks young voters who oppose Trump may be apathetic now because they don't believe he can win.
People may not take it serious until the week before. You know, like, oh, it could really happen. You know, he could be president. Or he may get into office and then people are like, oh my gosh, like, we let this happen. And then maybe the next 4 years they'll get it together.
With less than a month until Election Day and both campaigns crisscrossing Pennsylvania, the road to the White House could be powered by young voters. I'm J. Scott Smith.
Only half of the respondents to a small poll said that if they were suffering from anxiety or depression, they'd submit to genetic testing to determine which medication could work best, although they were enthusiastic about the same testing for a physical health issue like a heart problem. From WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, Anne Hoffman reports.
For James Crawford, finding the right medication for his depression was a grueling challenge.
You definitely get demoralized after a while when therapy doesn't seem to do anything, psychiatric medications don't do anything, and all you really do is exist.
Then his psychiatrist recommended trying a genetic test offered through the company Genomind. The company has tested 80,000 people. After completing a simple saliva test, Crawford and his psychiatrist discovered that traditional drugs used for depression weren't effective on him, but an anti-seizure medication and a supplement were. Now, Crawford says he feels fantastic, but it's hard to think back to the days before he found the right treatment.
You don't realize how much you miss when you're depressed. You miss out on joy when you're depressed. You miss out on love when you're depressed.
It's that often difficult process of finding the right med or combination of meds that Genomind is trying to help people circumvent, says Christina Haberman, their vice president of marketing.
This trial and error process can go on for months and potentially years, and sometimes patients never remit. They never see any resolution of their symptoms.
So why, in Genomind's poll of 1,000 people, did more people say they would try genetic testing for something like heart disease? Haberman says the company thinks the answer lies in stigma. They hope to combat that by doing more studies on the test and its role steering people toward more effective treatments. Anne Hoffman, WHYY News.
Still ahead this evening, there's a program in Allentown, Pennsylvania, based on the idea that if you've ended up homeless, you don't know how to take care of yourself, and it's the program's job to teach you.
There are components to why you became homeless. And I think one of our jobs is to at least help facilitate that not happening again.
Though some are questioning whether such attitudes really help break the cycle of homelessness. NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Yesterday, we heard about Turner Street, a program in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where parents get subsidized rent, a caseworker, and other support as they make their way through school. The idea? To help people get jobs that pay a living wage so they can pull themselves out of poverty. The program is one of thousands across the country operating under an assumption that many who end up homeless don't know how to take care of themselves and need to be taught. It's an idea that's fallen out of favor with the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. Keystone Crossroads reporter Mariel Segura has been following three women since January as they make their way through Turner Street. What follows is part two of that story.
In March 2016, Kira Cornwell is sitting on the couch in her living room, trying to get her four-year-old son, Martin, to go play in his room. Every few minutes, he pops his head in.
Go back in your room, babe.
Yeah, I want to stay with you.
Kira's 31. She studies corporate communications and arts administration at Penn State Lehigh Valley. And she's part of a program called Turner Street that provides affordable apartments to parents who are in school full time. She and her ex-husband share custody of Martin. She gets him four nights a week. But as she's been trying to tell me in the living room, that's about to change. A judge just granted primary custody to her ex, which means come August, she'll be seeing less of Martin. One of the reasons given for that decision was Kira's instability. When she couldn't afford housing, she moved a bunch of times and even ended up at a shelter. But now she's at Turner Street, where she's getting an affordable apartment, free food and household supplies, and the support of a caseworker. The program's director, Christine Blasco, testified at the custody hearing.
I was there to prove that Turner Street was somewhere that this mother finally could be safe and had a place.
That wasn't enough, and that might be because Turner Street is transitional housing, where residents face a ticking clock with only a certain amount of time to get on their feet. At Turner Street, it's 2 years. To a judge, that can look unstable. The judge on Kira's case didn't respond to requests for comment. The thing is, like other transitional housing, Turner Street also has strict eligibility rules. It requires residents to have 51% custody of at least one child. So ironically, the new custody order means Kira has to leave.
And all of the wonderful benefits I get from being here, I will have to forfeit.
The Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development is moving away from transitional housing programs, partly because they're seen as a temporary fix. A lot of people don't make it through. Out of 40 families who enrolled in Turner Street over the last 5 years, 13 have dropped out or been kicked out. 18 have graduated. Kira is hoping to appeal the judge's decision. Meanwhile, on another floor of the building, 19-year-old Deja Frischman is having a moment. It's spring 2016, and she's laying on her side on her living room couch.
Oh, how though? Oh, how though?
A tattoo artist she met on Facebook is tattooing her son's name, Omari, on her ribs.
Don't laugh, Omari!
Deja dropped out of high school when she got pregnant with Omari. She moved from place to place before ending up at Turner Street in fall 2015. Now she's a step away from getting kicked out of the program. Deja has three program violations, for leaving food in her old fridge and for missing a couple meetings. If she gets one more, the program can ask her to leave. She says she's starting to lose hope.
If you're just going to keep giving me a violation for every time I make a mistake and I can only get four violations in 2 years, then I feel like you're not really here to help me. And that's what I'm thinking. You're here to help me. You know, there's a reason why I got into this program.
This is a point of contention about transitional housing programs. Critics say the rules are too strict and set people up to fail. Imagine if you could get evicted for letting your laundry pile up too many times. But Deja's caseworker, Robbie Matthews, says the rules are there for a reason.
Wherever we go in life, there are rules. You're driving down the street, you have to stop. Why? Because there's a stop sign.
The rules may sound condescending, but Matthews says they're necessary.
There are components to why you became homeless. And I think one of our jobs is to at least help facilitate that not happening again.
This paternalism sets transitional housing apart from other programs, like Section 8, which gives people vouchers to rent apartments from private landlords. The federal government says this generally works better than transitional housing, but vouchers have their own shortcomings. Turner Street gives them to its residents after 2 years. 28-year-old Michelle Andrews finishes the program and gets her voucher in spring 2016.
It's like a hit or miss. Most people don't like dealing with Section 8.
Housing vouchers come with added costs and inspections, and some landlords just don't want to rent to people who get public assistance. Michelle's search takes months. In May, she tours an apartment in Slatington, Pennsylvania. She seems to be hitting it off with the landlord, who even recommends a local pizzeria.
Sal's Pizza Place is right across the street. They have the best pizza.
Oh, okay, good.
Then they start talking about the housing voucher.
Do you have a voucher from Emmaus or from Allentown?
Allentown.
There's a misunderstanding, and things get testy.
It's Allentown Housing. That's where I live now.
Understand that, but there's two different offices, and they have different roles. So do you go to the one on Emmaus?
Yes.
Okay. When I asked you which one you go to, if you went to the one in Allentown, you said yes. So, okay. That's fine.
The landlord gives her an application, and Michelle gathers her papers and leaves. Back in the car, she drives away from the house.
As soon as people like see that you have a voucher, they act like you have a third grade knowledge. Like you get questioned so much and then like second guessed.
But she says she's been looking for so long that if this apartment works out, she might take it. In our next installment, we'll find out whether Michelle can find a home, whether Kira and Deja will be able to stay in theirs, and what the future looks like for programs like Turner Street. Mariel Segarra, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station partnership. Last year, a show tracing the career of former Philadelphia Police Commissioner and Mayor Frank Rizzo had a highly successful world premiere run from Theater Exile. That same production is now revived at the Philadelphia Theater Company. And WHYY theater blogger Howard Shapiro says it's an instant box office draw.
The revival of the play Rizzo was extended even before it opened. Well, such is the continuing lore of the larger-than-life Frank L. Rizzo, the police commissioner, then mayor, who died in 1991. Philadelphia-based playwright Bruce Graham lays out the love-hate relationship the city had with Rizzo in the play's opening lines, in this cut from the stage of Philadelphia Theater Company.
Let me tell you about Rizzo.
Oh, God, Frank Rizzo.
Nobody never worried about people like us till Big Frank came along. You know why? He was from here, one of us.
He was a thug in a nicely tailored suit.
And there you have it. The core of two very different assessments of Frank Rizzo. Graham addresses this in Rizzo by letting you make up your mind and never coming down on any side. The play's adapted from Sal Palantonio's book Rizzo, The Last Man in Big City America. Palantonio, now an ESPN correspondent, was an Inquirer reporter who covered Rizzo. He's played as an unflappable journalist by Damon Benetti. And Rizzo's portrayed by one of the city's most versatile actors, Scott Greer. He gives us an all-around human, in addition to the blustery guy we remember from soundbites.
There will be no rioting in Philadelphia. Rabble-rousers, troublemakers, gangs, don't even think about it. We'll be on you like a ton of bricks.
That's Greer when Rizzo is sworn in as police commissioner. Some might see Graham's failure to take a side as a fault of the play. Rizzo's the sort of figure who was a flashpoint for love or for hate, and the hate part often came from the city's black community, where he was generally seen as a devil. But sinners and saints can be the same person, and Graham's play delivers both sides of this singular Philadelphian. The conniver, the bully, the vengeful leader, the charmer, jokester, fixer, and disruptor. The play forces you to stand back a quarter century after Rizzo's death and take a fresh look and understand how you perceive Rizzo and why. Rizzo runs through October 23rd at the Suzanne Roberts Theater. I'm Howard Shapiro for WHYY.
Finally this evening, the midnight deadline approaches for Pennsylvanians to register to vote in next month's election. One of the most original reminders comes from a rather unlikely source, a voter registration rap from an 84-year-old Chestnut Hill grandmother and family therapist. Dr. Lucille Ijoy has produced the music video Two Step, in which she raps about the two steps needed for civic engagement.
Listen to grandmama and take this special note. Step one is registration. Step two, go out and vote. It's called a two-step.
Procrastinating Pennsylvanians have 5.5 more hours to register to vote at votespa.com.
Citizens, don't you delay. It's time to do the two-step and do it right away.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. It's been 10 years since Philadelphia, under then-Mayor John Street, created a vision for the city's central waterfront along the Delaware River. Tomorrow evening, we'll take stock of that plan with Harris Steinberg, who ran the civic visioning process a decade ago. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.